Ladies and gentlemen, please take your seats. The show is about to begin.
Welcome to Cavs, the podcast. I'm Nate Smith, and I am here with Chris Francis. And it has been a minute, been about 2 months since we've had a podcast.
Before the draft.
Yeah, and I have to apologize. I got super sick. I got the vid, and I pretty much couldn't talk for about 5 weeks without wheezing horribly. I'm glad to be – I think I'm fully recovered now, so – I'm glad to be back in the saddle here for Cavs the podcast. Only a two-man booth tonight, just to concentrate the power of Cavs the blog tonight, or Cavs the podcast. And thank you for holding down the fort on the blog with some timely post, just to keep the content train rolling. I know it's been a minute there too, but
that's so funny you bring that up, because I was just thinking about, like, you know, I was just thinking about how I know you were on the treadmill, you know, for years, and I'm just like, holy crap, how the hell did you get through years of being on the grind?
And, well, you know, like,
the hardest core of hardest core, you know what I mean? I have so much respect for you.
I'll tell you what, we got pretty lax in the summer, so that's no big deal.
Well, I mean, there has to be an off season.
Yeah,
you know, there has to be an off season.
You need time to renew. Yeah. Well, and then we will rise. I won't say like the Phoenix, because I don't think the Phoenix is rising anywhere this year. But
get there, but
we will rise like the Cavaliers, and not like the Blazers broadcast team. And man, this is the longest offseason ever, I feel like. I think it's because the last couple were compressed because of the COVID seasons and the
bubble year. No, that's a great point. Like, this is the first regular offseason in years.
Like, since 2000. Or 2020, I mean.
Right. So it's been years.
Yeah. It's been about three years. Yeah. Wow. It's been super weird. And a lot of news today. I don't know, that little bit about the Blazers broadcast team, they are not sending their TV and radio crews on the road.
Wait, so what happened? Like, I'm totally clueless.
They cheaped out. The owner cheaped out. They are not sending the TV and radio crews on the road this year. So they will only have
the one main studio, right?
Yeah, they have the one main camera angle, and that's it. So... And I don't know if you've ever, I mean, we had to endure some of that through COVID, obviously, for obvious reasons. But
yeah, right.
Like, remember when NBA TV used to do those, they wouldn't use the local team broadcast, they'd use the guys in the studio. It was just awful. Like, there was just no
flow.
Oh, really?
They did?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, come on.
There was no flow, like, no feel for the moment. Like,
yeah.
Basically, you only got what was on the TV. So if there's something else going on, the commenters are totally clueless.
What's ironic about that? Well, I guess it's not that ironic, but I was just going to say, like, ESPN used to have, like, a coach's room where, like, they'd have a whole bunch of coaches commentating on the football game. And it actually made for compelling TV, because, like, they could explain what's happening.
Can work because
there's just so much dead time.
Yeah, exactly. But right. basketball, it's like if it's you're action. Not in yeah. the flow, and
yep.
a lot of stuff in basketball happens off camera.
Right, right, right.
You know, with somebody's trailing the play, they get in a fight, or the coach is yelling something at the ref, or something like that. Like, a lot of the notable things are things that happen off camera. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, the action's way too fast probably to respond in the same way, so... No,
yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
Yeah, I hear you.
So that's but a weird one.
Yeah, no, I was gonna talking about how long the off season was. I think it also ground to a halt because of Kevin Durant.
Oh right? yeah, I was just
and Donovan
same,
Mitchell. Yeah,
yeah. he's the linchpins of Durant, Mitchell, and Irving. That law yeah. firm that no one wants to represent them.
Oh man, I mean, Do you think any moves are going to happen? I mean, like, or do you think it's just what it was? That's all there is.
So I kind of go with the Patrick Fenelon theory of the Nets were never really serious about making a trade. They basically wanted to say they did their due diligence and then say, hey, we tried, you know, let's try to make
this work. Think you think they're going to try and play hardball eventually with Kevin?
I think they're kind of doing their due diligence, but their price is so high that nobody can really meet it. So they're just they're kind of going through the motions.
What did you think about the Boston package or the Philly package? Do you think Boston or Philly has a trade package that can make it happen?
Well, I don't even understand Philly. I don't think Philly does because I think Maxey is a nice player. I don't think he's a star. I think he's probably a high-level starter, ultimately, and maybe, you know, borderline. Maybe he sniffs one all-star game as an injury replacement, but that's kind of his ceiling, I think. I think he could be a player on a championship team, but I don't think he's the kind of guy that is going to move the needle in the Durant trade. And the rest of the guys they got are like Tobias Harris and a bunch of,
I mean, they'll have to manufacture picks. I mean, that's really what it's going to be. Right.
Right. Well, the other side of that is I got to think that the Nets are a little annoyed, feel like they got played in the Durant trade in the Harden trade to begin with. So,
oh, yeah, I mean, like that was,
so maybe they are like, yeah, we don't want to deal with them. And the Boston deal, like, I heard that they wanted Tatum and Brown. I think Brown might be the centerpiece of a decent trade, but if I'm the Nets, I don't really want to go back to the team we had. I think I want to try and make it work with KD. Now, have you heard the rumor that he wanted Steve Nash and the GM? I can't remember his name.
Right. Sean Marks. Is it Sean Marks?
Or yep.
I don't know if it's him
it's
or
Sean
his
Marks.
Brother. Okay.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah, no, I did hear that. And I mean, it's just funny because to me, it sounds irrelevant. Right. You know what I mean? Like it's just, I don't know. I mean, like it just seemed like I don't think they'll do it. And then it goes back to Kevin Durant, like basically trying to force his way out. Right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
I honestly think, Steve Nash is not a great fit there, but the other side of it is that was also his handpicked dude from the summer before.
Right.
Like, I think you could say, hey, make it work with Kevin, but we'll fire the GM. Although I don't really think any of this is the GM's fault other than not standing up to Kyrie more. But
yeah,
I heard funny one today was basically the Nets were willing to offer Kyrie an extension, but they wanted a games played clause.
Yeah.
And right. Kyrie balked. And
see, what's funny is that
Kevin got pissed, but who knows?
Yeah, well, and that's the thing. My angle was that Kevin was doing all this basically. It was his only leverage to get his boy paid, essentially. Like it was the only leverage that they had that he and Kyrie had to make sure that they both got paid. And since it didn't happen, now like Durant's like stuck trying to either pretend or he actually does just want to get out. You know what I mean? He's tired of dealing with Kyrie. He just wants to go, you know, although supposedly, you know, supposedly he still would play with him. But I mean, to me,
I heard the other thing was he secretly didn't want to be with Kyrie and it was just an excuse. So who knows?
Yeah, no, I mean, like, to me, if I'm Kevin Durant, I don't understand how you're not mad as hell at Kyrie. You know what I mean? Like, I don't understand, like, how you just, like, as a man would be like, man, you know, this dude's, you know, I'm sorry. Yeah, yeah, I mean, just, like, you're not about that. You're not about your business at all. Not even, you know. So, I just don't get how Kevin Durant's like not.
Oh, Kevin Durant's his own special dude. I don't get Kevin Durant most of the time. But the funny thing about it is like, how long's his window? Like,
That's a great question.
Is it 2 or 3 years left? Or?
Well, that's a great question because I don't know if you caught the comment on the comment thread with our commentary at Jason. But, like, basically, he did a great breakdown of, like, the ages of Finals MVPs and like the oldest age a player was, and essentially the window's already closed for him. I mean, you know, probability wise,
yeah,
of being a Finals MVP guy.
Yeah, he's
you
not
know what
Jordan.
I mean. Like, so yeah, I mean Jordan was the oldest by far. Like, or it, I think it was Jordan and LeBron. You know, yeah. I think were probably the two highest. Like, I just remember like basically it was Kareem. Like the cutoff was like age 35. And yeah. I don't know what age KD is, but I think he's going
I
into
think
his
he's
age
almost 35.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he's 34.
Oh, so. No, he's 33. So, I mean, okay, so you're right. I mean, like, basically he's looking at a 2 year, yeah, 1 or 2 year window where he's a MVP level guy.
And maybe that's why he wants to go somewhere else, but.
No, exactly. And so I've kind of come around. That's, you know, that's kind of full circle how I came around. Like, first I thought it was just a ploy. But now I'm starting to believe he wants to get out. Like, I don't know if you saw the video of him working out with Jason Tatum. Did you?
No.
Oh, yeah. Like, there's like, you know, he's literally, you know, just a few days ago did a photo op with Jason Tatum in a gym. So, yeah. I mean,
I
like,
I don't know if those guys could play together, to be honest with you.
I mean, I think they can. I mean, I don't see a problem with it. I think more than anything, it's just based on kind of what you alluded to before, Katie. It's his health. You know, he's 33 going on 34 and has had major injuries like the Achilles. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, yeah, to me, it's like that's the only concern is can you load manage him and get him in top shape in the playoffs? And that's the problem is that, you know, the East is going to be a meat grinder. Are they going to be able to get a top four seed by just playing Tatum most of the nights, you know, or you're playing, you know, basically overextending Tatum because he's younger to give
if
KD,
they were
you know,
to trade for KD, you mean?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I think that
exactly.
team's pretty deep, though. Well,
no, I mean, I think, you're right. You're
I think
absolutely
deep
I,
at the
I agree.
Wing, yeah. But shallow at the big and point guard spots.
Right.
They're weird. They're a weirdly put together team.
Yeah. Yeah. No, like I totally agree.
Robert
yeah.
Griffin being hurt in the playoffs was brutal for them.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I mean, it's so funny. Like, you know, it's so funny, like, how there was this narrative about, like, rim running bigs not being valuable. But, like, look at guys like Jared Allen and Rob Williams and, like, look at how much of the success of the teams is based on what they can do on a court. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like,
well, those
I mean, like you said,
really
yeah.
unique.
Yeah, no, you're right. Cause I think the uniqueness about them is their athleticism.
Like, well, they just, and their ability to guard on the perimeter and yep, not get yep. roasted. I mean, you see a guy like Capella, you have to always play drop coverage with Capella and
right.
He's just going to get roasted.
Yeah.
You know?
No, I mean, it helps being 23, doesn't it?
It does, and I think you're going to see more of these super mobile rim-running bigs. You got, like, Jackson Hayes down in
no, you're right. Yeah.
In New Orleans.
Well, they did, and they even did Twin
when
Towers.
They started. Yeah, they did. Yeah,
with
really
Jonas.
To see
yeah,
what they,
exactly.
go back to next year when Zion's back.
Oh, yeah. Right, right. Well, and they can actually probably move Zion down. I mean, Zion wants to be a perimeter player anyway. And, well, and I was just going to say, Minnesota is doing Twin Towers now.
Yeah.
So it's so funny.
Yeah,
right. Exactly. So it's really, yeah, I can't wait to see those two teams. I don't know about you.
Yeah, it's going to be weird. Sure. Yeah, there's a lot of great headlines. So but the other thing is like you said, that KD is kind of the linchpin holding a bunch of other deals up. I kind of went back and forth with somebody on Twitter last month basically saying, well, the reason that Windler and or Chetty haven't been moved to bring their Cavs roster down to 15 spots is nobody wants to the Cavs don't want to give up a first round pick to make someone take them.
Right.
And secondly, right. There's not that many open roster spots in the NBA right now. Mm-hmm. And third, not a lot of teams with cap space. And actually, the biggest reason is that people don't want to waste, if they do have open roster spots, they don't want to waste them when there could be derivatives from the Durant
shakeout
and all the moves that haven't happened yet.
Yeah, that's what I was just
saying. They don't want to pay that opportunity cost, you know?
Yeah, I was just going to say, what you're saying totally applies to Sexton, too, and why he's not signed. You know what I mean? Because he could be used in as salary ballast in trades and stuff like that, or you know what I mean, or possibly picks. I don't know, but
I
kind of salary based.
Wrote a somewhat long Twitter rant about the other old guy that is a free agent or was a free agent or had a lot of rumors surrounding him. Anyway, we'll get to that when we come back in just a minute. Welcome back to Cavs, the podcast. I'm Nate Smith here with Chris Francis. And the guy that I wanted to talk about that a lot of rumors were swirling and supposedly were put to bed yesterday was LeBron James.
Aww.
And I thought he signed a 2-year extension with LA. The second year of that is an option, which basically puts him under contract through next season or through 22-23 and 23-24 for sure. And I thought it
was
interesting. So
next season is locked up, you're saying?
Next season locked up. But I actually think it's easier to trade for LeBron next season than it is to if he hadn't been under contract. Because now that he's going to be under contract next summer, you don't have to do a sign and trade, which would hard cap either team if they were over the salary cap or over the tax threshold. Is it salary cap or tax threshold? I can't remember. But anyway, if you do a sign and trade and you're over one of those, you get hard capped. And it's hard to work around that. Well, if he's already under contract, you don't have that stipulation. That was one of the things I said. Well, maybe
Cap
you do want
to. Nate. Hell yeah.
Maybe you do want to sign Sexton for a little bit more to kind of balance out those salaries if that's something you want to do next year.
Wow. Wow. Oh, my goodness.
I don't know.
The wheels are turning here. I feel like.
I got an article.
No, I feel like you're onto something. Yeah, I feel like you're onto something here. You know what I mean? Like. You know, it was interesting. Did you see the tweet? Did you see the tweet that Chris Fedor sent out about LeBron?
No.
Oh, it said like something like a dream delayed or something like that. It was basically teasing like, oh, you know, to me, it implied what you're saying, honestly, is like this doesn't, you know, the contract doesn't mean that he's not gone, you know, by the end of the season.
Yeah, well,
which was supposed to happen anyway.
Yeah, well, the other thing that could happen is that now that he has an option for that second year, he can kind of hold the Lakers hostage and say, "I'm only opting in if you trade me."
Right.
You know, or I mean, it gives both the team and LeBron some optionality, which, you know, everybody in the NBA wants optionality. And so the other goofy thing about it is though. There could totally be a work stoppage next summer because the players and the owners both have the option to opt out of the CBA
totally heading
before
that
the
way.
new before the end of this season.
So. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, obviously all the talk about how Stars are demanding trades and not playing, you know, the Ben Simmons
signing a 4-year extension and then asking for a trade. I mean, that's pretty ridiculous on the Kevin Durant front, but
the Ben Simmons thing, you know, he basically signed a max contract and, you know, just basically quit on the team.
Yeah. You know, sign and retire.
Yeah. It was a totally, you know, and, so it sounds like the knives are out. Like, it was funny because like all the reporting before that was just like, you know, Michelle Roberts? I don't know if it's Michelle Roberts still the head of the NBAPA.
She is not lead counsel anymore, I don't think.
Oh, okay. I'm not, you know, well, you know, when she was there, it was interesting. Like, they acted like it was a foregone conclusion that, you there?
Yep.
Okay. They were acting like it was a foregone conclusion that like they'd be able to extend the CBA. But now, you know, like you mentioned, everybody knows the dates now because they think it's over. You know what I mean? They think, you know, some hardcore negotiations are about to happen. And like you said, a work stop. I think it has to be. Do you think it's likely? Or what percentage do you put on a work stoppage?
I don't put a huge percentage on it. I would say 30%. I think both. So one of the things
that's kind of high.
Well, the union leadership for the Players Association is all older. So they really don't want to, you know, risk their window, in my opinion. The other thing that's going on is both sides may opt in. Because the TV deal doesn't expire till 2025-26. And it may be too early to tell what that looks like. And so both sides may want to be like, let's wait it out another year, you know, or two. So I don't know. It's certainly going to be interesting.
30%. Yeah.
I think next summer, there's so much up in the air in the NBA.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. Well, and the other question is how long, you know, going back to the previous discussion, how long can LeBron play at a high level? I mean, he's basically, I commented there's three guys that have played at this level at this age. Jordan, LeBron, and Kareem. And Jordan retired for 2 years, came back at 39, and averaged 20 a game for the Wizards. So, I mean, my thought is that LeBron is probably going to try and play till he's 41 so he can play with both his sons. Bryce, I think 25, 26 would be when Bryce would be his rookie year, theoretically. And if that new TV money is kicking in the year, you think LeBron's passing that up?
Wow, you got it all.
I got it all figured out.
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing. So is he doing it in Cleveland?
The COVID fog is lifted.
Is he doing this in Cleveland? Is the question? Do you?
Yeah,
think
I don't know. I think he wants to play with both his sons. Is
right.
What
so
he
you're just saying, yeah. You it's totally dependent upon where they go. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
I think he wants to play with Bronny and he wants to play with Bryce. So,
I mean, that'd be a hell of a story.
No, when's the last time you saw that? It was like Ken Griffey Jr.
Yeah, exactly. Right. It was in a totally different
Cal
sport
Ripken
where it actually
Jr.
Yeah.
And senior.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah.
I don't think have we ever seen
in the NBA?
We've seen a lot of kids of players play in the NBA, but we haven't seen them play together.
Right. Exactly. Because, I mean, I just think, you know, it's so hard to be, I mean, so hard to sustain success after your third. Yeah, exactly.
Baseball, you can have a little more longevity, but.
I think so. Yeah, I agree. So, yeah, I mean, it'll be absolutely wild. That, I mean, like you said, the dollar signs. Oh, my God. The marketing opportunities.
Oh,
of having, you know, especially with the machine they already have and everything. So,
yeah.
Yeah,
but I think the other part of it is his family's in LA. His kid's a senior this year. Bronny's a senior this year. His family's in L.A. His wife, by all the reports, wants to stay in L.A. The guy literally has nothing to prove on a basketball court other than the one thing I think probably
I think he wants records now.
Well, I think he wants Wilt's – or not Wilt's, Kareem's all-time scoring record.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Is the one he's probably gunning for and may never be broken after he gets it.
Yeah, that's insane. That's truly insane. I mean, like, it's so crazy. Like, it's only been the past few years that he's even had injuries, you know?
Yeah.
And it's fine, you know, finally, you know, but I don't think it's his capabilities that are diminishing. It's just simply he can't recover as well. You know, like his stamina is lower and he just can't recover as well. You know,
And I don't think he can be that guy on both sides of the floor.
Right.
For 35 minutes a night. I think he's definitely got to pick his spots more. He needs his teammates to cover for him. And that's part of the reason that L.A. situation is such a mess, because they don't have the depth to do that.
Exactly. That's the whole thing. They got worse this year. They got worse. They lost. It's so funny. Like, losing Malik Monk is actually a big loss for them. He was their third best player last season, and they lost him. They replaced him with Lonnie Walker. You know what I mean?
Yeah, who was not good last year.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Is like he's not the shooter that Malik Monk is, for sure.
Yeah.
You know, at least. So, I don't know. I mean, like...
Yeah, and they still have Westbrook and...
Yeah, you're right.
The worst part about Westbrook is they're so far over the cap, they would actually be better off finding a place to trade him, because at least they could get some players back. Because if his contract drops off, they don't have a great way to get other players. I think they'll actually have some exceptions and some other stuff that comes back. But who knows when Westbrook's contract drops off how they're going to be able to operate. So it's going to be weird.
No. The same thing always happens is that they're an incredibly incompetent franchise, incredibly incompetent franchise that falls into generational talent just because they want to live in LA.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's certainly, may you live in interesting times. Yeah, what other stories are percolating around? I know we've seen a lot of video of guys in playing against scrubs or playing in pro-ams and stuff like that. And
oh, man.
Kind of dominating. I know the one that excited me yesterday was Evan Mobley's jump shot being compared to KD's, and it looked pretty smooth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the thing for me last season is that with respect to Evan Mobley shooting is I think he just lost confidence and lost his legs. You know, he got dead legs.
Sure. I think the legs was a big thing, and not just the legs, but when you're as skinny as he is, it's hard to keep the weight on and it's hard to keep the muscle on. I think he really needs a nutritionist and a weight program in season.
Right. Right.
Because you could see him get thinner as the season went on.
Yeah. Because he looked amazing for the first couple months. And then, you know, as soon as the injury started piling up, as soon as he had to take on more of a burden, you know, and then the NBA grind, you know, wasn't it a compressed schedule last year? So
a little bit, yeah.
A little bit. So, yeah, I mean, just.
I think it was, it was a compressed off season. Yeah, okay. It was a compressed off season.
Okay. Okay. I thought it was a compressed schedule too, but that might have been the season before, maybe.
I think it was, it's all a blur. So yeah, thing that was, I don't know if you've seen the video of Darius Garland, but he's put on some muscle. He looks like he's added at least 10 pounds of muscle. Like, he does not look skinny.
I mean, he's 22, right?
Yeah.
Isn't he? I think.
Yeah.
Hot Googling action. Yeah, 22. Just turned 22 this last season. So, yeah, I mean, like, that's the thing. You know, what's funny is, like, I think he also has a lot of motivation going into the off season because of the flame out, you know, to the end of the season left a bad taste in guys' mouth. I would assume especially him, because he's a guy, I think he's a lot more competitive than people give him credit
for. He got some dog in him.
He does. Exact. Thank you, Nate.
He's a dog.
You. That's right. That's right. That's right. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, the baby face, you know, might fool you.
I know what you're saying.
And the smile, you know, but, you know, I think it has to eat at him. You know, it has to eat at him because he got out. The thing is he got out by a guy that's much like him in Trae Young, you know, a virtuoso passer and shooter. So I think that, you know, if he got that dog in him, man.
Okay. And let's be honest, virtuoso grifter.
Yeah, right. Absolutely.
Foul hunter.
No, nothing. Yeah. That, which Garland never does, thankfully.
Well, I wouldn't say he never does it, but nobody
tastefully.
Does it like
it's Trae. Tasteful. Yeah. He's tasteful.
With it. Trae and Harden are the worst.
Oh, man. Oh, man. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. So.
And
yeah, what other videos? Yeah, what other videos?
Colin Sexton schooling some scrubs and putting up some weak finishes that would get swatted into next week. and he didn't seem like he had a ton of lift to me still. But well, he's always been more of a vertical or a straight line speed guy rather than a you know, explosive at the basket guy. So.
Well,
I don't know.
I mean, if you I know that's my concern too, because I mean, look at Darius Garland's season after meniscus surgery.
Yeah.
You know, he did not have any explosiveness at all. And now, you know, we didn't really see him look better till year two. And then finally, you know, like you said he might have put on 10 pounds, you know, maybe he finally feels healthy, fully healthy for the first time in a long time.
Well, so, and maybe he's got a stable enough base to put on the extra muscle.
Exactly. 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 So.
Well, and I don't know if you've been watching him on pro-ams and stuff, but he's been throwing down dunks, which I don't remember Garland hardly dunking at all in his first three seasons for the Cavs. Like, he may have had one or two soft slams, but he's legit throwing down oops in pickup games. So,
hey, man, what do you think? You know, what's the ceiling for next season for Garland?
I think the ceiling is definitely all-star. Definitely.
Well, you already did that. Yeah.
Playoffs. I think it's really hard to. I don't know. I think it's really hard to make all NBA as a guard. It's just the competition is so high. And plus, you're competing with guys at two spots, point guard and shooting guard. So it's going to be difficult. But I think third team NBA, all NBA is the outside shot if they're really good.
I love it. I love it.
I think you're more likely to.
I think he deserved it last year.
Well, yeah, it's hard to say. I think third team NBA and then an all-star appearance is
in playoffs, right?
Yeah. I want to see the second round, but I'll settle for at least six games in the first.
Oh, man. Oh, man. I'm getting excited. I'm getting excited too.
So, we'll be right back. So, other Cavs off-season news. There's been some rumblings on the Twitters and that Isaac Okoro is starting to look really good in workouts. And hey, third year is kind of the charm for some of these Cavs guys. I'm excited for Isaac Okoro. I'd love him to just come out in training camp and say and put the decision to rest on who's the starting two guard and just be like, nope, that's mine. And I'm going to clamp down on defense. I'm going to hit open threes, and I'm going to slash to the basket. Like,
wow.
Give me Jimmy Butler light there. That's what I want.
Wow. Wow, Nate's fine. I mean, he's only 21. He's 21.
He's only 21. Yeah.
He's 21, and
this is his first real offseason.
He's a gift from God. Yeah, right. No, exactly. No. What's interesting is like he put up decent numbers shooting. The whole thing is, can they get the ball in his hands more? Can he be more effective with the ball in his hands? Because that's sticking him in the corner.
I think it's just confidence more than anything.
Yeah, no, I agree. No, I totally agree. It's just, he lost it because of the stakes in the play-in scenario. You know, it's the first, he was 21 years old. You know, guys are first time experience in any type of pressure situation. A 21-year-old is going to struggle in that situation. It's the NBA. You know what I mean? Like, these are all professionals here, and they take advantage of young guys.
Well, and I just don't. You know? I think even especially on offense, it's confidence for him.
Exactly. Yeah. No. What I want to see, what I'm hearing from you is that is there the dribble drive game coming along? Is the pick and roll game coming along? Is the passing?
I think it's coming along a little. I think he wants to be a better version of what we saw last year. Scoring in transition, hitting wide open threes, especially in the corner, cutting to the basket. Limited dribble drive game on close. I think one of the things that's a big key for him is getting to be a good enough shooter that he can attack closeouts.
Right.
Because if he can get to that point, that opens up his game. That totally opens up his game because he's probably not a guy you're going to have run your offense, but he can make things happen on a dribble closeout.
Yeah.
On a dribble drive.
You know what I want to see from him? I want to see some rebounding from him.
Well, that is the other thing. Yes, we all would love to see more rebounding from pretty much anybody on the Cavs not named Kevin Love or Jared Allen.
You're right. Yeah. Well, exactly. But, I mean, come on, Ice. Come on, man.
We need to see more rebounding for sure. And Ben Worth called it a couple of years. When he first came in for the Cavs, his goal was not – his assignment was not to rebound. It was to go lock down a perimeter player, which when you're doing that, it's hard to be a good rebounder.
Yeah.
But I just think with
the threes that are shot today, how many times did we see them not get rebounds on threes?
Learning how to recover to the free throw line when you're a guard and get them long rebounds.
Exactly. And then the ball's in his hands. You know, that's the whole, that's what drives me nuts is that a rebound is a free opportunity to get your hands on the ball and you get to control, go into control mode. You know what I mean? And dictate what the game's doing.
Yeah.
And, especially in transition, right?
It's rebounds.
Yeah. I mean,
he had some really nice offensive rebounds.
No, you're right.
Defensive rebounding is actually where he needs to pick up the most.
Yes. Oh, 100%. 100%. No, you're
absolutely. Part of that's an awareness thing. Like, if you're spending your entire time locking down a player and you are literally a rookie or a second year guy, having that duology of mind to, okay, now that shot's up, I got to box out, seal, go get the rebound. Mm-hmm. Like, that is a complex thought process that, it comes when the game speeds up for you.
Oh, absolutely. No, I mean, that's the whole thing is that at that level, you're probably in rotation or you probably have a guy that you're supposed to rotate to in order to box them out. And, the game's so fast at that level, it's just hard to keep up.
Yeah. So any other big news that you've been following in the NBA?
I've
been a little out of the loop.
Yeah, so the newest thing is, there was a rumor about a report about a Donovan Mitchell to the New York Knicks trade that did not happen. Apparently, I want to say it was RJ Barrett, it was either the inclusion of RJ Barrett or a pick or something like that, that was preventing the trade from happening. So the talks died. Well, apparently, just a day or two ago, maybe even today, I can't remember when it was. It was just this week, though. They've apparently re-engaged. The Knicks and the Jazz have re-engaged trade talks for Donovan Mitchell. So, and the thing of it is that I don't know what your take is, and I'd love to get it, but I think that the general consensus about the trade proposal back then was that the Knicks blew it. They should have just included Barrett and
I don't agree with that at all.
Really? Are you a closet RJ Barrett fan?
I think RJ Barrett's got the potential to be a good player. And I think Donovan Mitchell has gotten a little overrated. He definitely seemed like a diva last year, and I have a hard time believing that he's going to be less of a diva in New York. And I kind of feel like this is the classic New York move of get a bunch of good young prospects and then trade them all for a one-dimensional guy who, yay, he gets you to the first round of the playoffs. You know, and that's
they don't
what,
get to the first round of the playoffs very much, though.
Well, I get it, but I feel like they never build. But it's weird. But I would also be shocked if Mitchell did not end up in New York. I don't think a lot of teams want to trade for him because every team knows he wants to be in New York.
Right.
And he's a CAA guy. They're a CAA team.
Yeah. There you go.
I think the writing is on the wall there. And obviously, everybody's saying the Jazz absolutely want to tank this year.
Oh, 100%. Well,
yeah,
he's
the Wimbaya sweepstakes right now. Am I wrong?
Oh, absolutely. Them and the Spurs, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
Speaking of which, I feel like there's a bunch of guys you could pry off the Jazz right now. I mean, I would love to maybe see a Jordan Clarkson trade go. If you figure out that Isaac Okoro is your starting two, go trade Caris LeVert for Jordan Clarkson or a Bojan Bogdanovic, who I think would be a fantastic addition to this team.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm high on Caris.
You're high on Caris.
I'm high.
I think
on
you're
Caris.
High on something.
Well, of course, but also on Caris.
Yeah, I've not seen. I think it's really hard to say. Hey, he had the best plus minus in that playoff game against Atlanta, or the play-in game against Atlanta. But then look at the rest of his career. When in the regular season, he's been pretty much a player that's right about the VORP level. Like, he's right around zero. He hasn't been a great wins above replacement and just hasn't really positively impacted winning much. I have a hard time seeing that changing.
I think it has to do with his role. I mean, like, when what you're talking about and what he's been for the most of his career is he's been pigeonholed, not necessarily pigeonholed, but he's basically been elevated into like a first option, second option guy when he's more like a fifth option, fourth option. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but he thinks he's a first or second option guy the way in the
I don't get that
hands.
Vibe from him at all. No, yeah. I mean, okay. No, if you look at his stats, in fact, what's amazing about his stats is his playmaking gets a lot better in the playoffs. He actually sees, you know, his assist rate goes up to like 30 or 40%. It's insane. So I'm just saying that, you know, the real question about Caris is, you know, he's got the prettiest jumper in the world that doesn't go in. You know, that's the problem. That's really the problem. And can he find his shooting rhythm, you know, and also be willing to pull the trigger and take those just stand up jump shots, you know what I mean, when they're open? So, you know.
Well, that and be a guy that passes and cuts. Like, don't be the guy that wiggles around and dribbles for 15, 16 seconds. Be the guy that if something's there, great. If not, move the ball, cut, get it back. I mean, that's – I don't know.
Yeah. No, I mean, I you know, the –
there's
got to
be a middle ground between those two things that he should be doing. So
yeah, no, I mean, the most intriguing part for me about him is that, you know, as I wrote in, I forget which article it was, but, you know, when I was doing research for it, the Karras Darius Garland pairing in a few hundred minutes or whatever that they played, posted a 121 offensive rating.
Nice.
Which is, you know, yeah, that'll win a championship. That's a championship level offense right there. And that was a lot of it was without Jared Allen.
Yeah.
You know, cause he had the, hand injury, the hand wrist. I can't remember what he broke, but I think he broke a finger or something.
Yep, he broke the pinky.
Yeah. So, your points are fair. And obviously the things that he struggled in, I don't think that we could expect that much more improvement. But what I think can improve is, I think mainly the easiest thing for him to improve is the spot up shooting, you know?
Yeah.
Get those wide open, take Okoro's looks. Can he make Okoro's looks is the question.
Yeah.
I mean, Okoro, you know, was getting the most wide open looks in the NBA last season. So if we just can get one guy that could also dribble and pass along with that spot up shooting. Oh my God.
Yeah. Well, and if Mobley can, you know, be a 3-point shooter or even just a regular long 2 shooter, that opens up the floor. And I don't know if you saw Lauri Markkanen's line tonight for Finland.
Mm-hmm. There we go.
42 points.
Yes, sir. He's another guy. I put him in the same basket or a similar basket as Karras, where I think year two, you know, an off season together, year two, get, you know, start with the group, you know, from the beginning of the season, you know, and find your chemistry from the jump, you know, instead of being thrown in mid-season. Well, it wasn't mid-season in Laurie's case, but last year was his first year, you know, and also he was playing a new position. You know, he didn't play very much three in Chicago. So I think year two, you know, I'm looking at, you know, can Karras get integrated? And then Laurie, year two Laurie, you know, a confident shooting year two Laurie.
He's
24.
Thought,
he's 24 years old.
That's the insane thing. Like, I thought Laurie was really good last year. And I think a lot of people remember him getting roasted in one-on-one by Trey.
Right.
But, you know, you can't put Laurie on an island over and over and over against Trae Young. You've got to throw different coverages at that guy.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to punish him on defense. And you can't just give him an appetite of, I'm gonna go get this big. You know, you've got to
go give him his mismatch. Plus,
the other thing is, Laurie didn't have any backline defense behind him. Like, he was the center. So it's very difficult to fault Laurie for how that play-in game worked. And I thought he was fantastic in the regular season.
Well, he was one of the best players on the court that night. I mean, he put up like 20-something and 7, you know, on really efficient. Yeah.
And he was, you know, I think probably the third best or fourth best Cav, you know, depending on where you want to rank Mobley, with Garland and Allen being the all-stars, and then Mobley and Markkanen were right there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know,
no, I mean,
I would say that Markkanen was more consistent than Mobley last year.
I don't know about that. No, I can't go there. I think he had
lower standard deviation, but we'll have to go look that up.
Yeah, I think with Laurie, the thing was, is I think the things that stood out about Laurie is, one, he was clutch.
Yeah.
Like, how many clutch shots did he hit last season? So that was the thing that I remember, like, his willingness to shoot, you know, in clutch situations stood out. And I think he improved as the year. I think that's what I noticed, is that after he had COVID, he had the ankle injury. Then he finally started finding his footing at the second half of the season.
Yeah.
And finally, you know, I think in you know, all he really, and you talk about confidence with Okoro. That's what I think Laurie's just needs a little bit more you know, selfishness to his game, you know, in terms of going to get his shot, you know, if he just lets it fly just 10% more, you know, I think we're talking about a guy that can maybe, you know, tease like a 20, you know, he could be like teasing a 20 point per game scorer, you know, because of his 3-point shooting.
For sure.
Yeah, exactly. 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 So, yeah, no, I'm excited. No, absolutely. Like, I'm totally agree with you.
Cavs depth at the start of the season here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, I think
it's the youth,
who do you think
right?
plays backup point guard for them?
Well, I mean, I think it's without a doubt going to be Raul Neto.
Really? I think he's going to end up being the third guy, and I think Karras is going to get a lot of backup point guard minutes.
I could see why they would want to give backup point guard minutes to Karras. That makes sense. Like, you actually, that's a fair point, but I just think that I think with Neto, that was a great pickup, honestly. You know, let's begin with that. I think it was a savvy pickup because his ability to pass the ball and shoot in the mid-range, you know? Like, that's the thing, is he's going to keep the ball moving with the backups.
Yeah, for sure. And he is not Brandon Goodwin. Like, he's a guy that can run an NBA offense
exactly.
for a few weeks at a time if he needs
exactly.
to.
He knows what he's doing out there. He's 30 years old. He came to this situation basically looking to contribute to a winning situation. He wants to play playoff basketball. He wants to contribute, you know, to winning in a playoff setting. So I think, you know, the two things that stuck out to me about him is his passing, his mid-range shooting, honestly, his defense too. I mean, obviously he'll get picked on because he's tiny, but he can create a steal.
Yeah,
you know?
No,
he can pick
he's
pocket.
Small, but he's not. Who was the guy they had last year from Duke?
Yeah,
it's gonna drive me nuts.
I know. Oh man.
Hot Googling action.
Yeah.
Well, we'll fill you in when we come back.
There you go. Perfect.
1 second.
Perfect.
Welcome back to Cavs a Podcast. The guy I was trying to think of, Kevin Mangos Pangos, the tiniest player I've seen since Chris Ford, who's consistently picked on, and then signed disastrous Euro contract ever. Did you hear about that?
No,
he signed with KSKA Moscow like a week before they invaded Ukraine.
No.
And basically all the Soviet EuroLeague teams got banned. So I don't even think he got paid. So hopefully he didn't waive his Cavalier salary.
Oh, no.
Yeah, exactly. So, Kevin Pangos, who I was thinking of. And
yeah, I mean, I'm glad you brought him up because that's the upgrade. You know, we replaced literally Kevin Pangos with Raul Neto. That's a huge upgrade.
In the break, Chris said, Neto is Pangos if he could play. Yeah, but I
love you, Pangos. I was rooting for you, man. I was rooting
for him too.
It was tough.
He was tough. It just he wasn't big enough.
No, absolutely no. Well, and he had no confidence at all.
I think if he'd have come in earlier in his career, and kind of learned how to play with the big boys, he might have had a shot. But he was too old at that point.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, wasn't he? He signed it like at 29 years old, right? Like, he was.
You don't have a long runway when you're 29.
No, like, not at all. No, exactly. Yeah. Absolutely. So, no, I mean, I think, you know, that's the thing is, you know, to talk a little more Cavs is that, you know, I like the signings of Raul Neto and Robin Lopez. I mean, I think they went out and got. Exactly. I think they upgraded. I feel like, Neto is an upgrade over Pangos. I think Robin Lopez is an upgrade over Ed Davis. You know?
Yeah. I think both guys. So my theory on both guys is they are break glass in case of emergency players. I think you're going to see a lot of Caris LeVert at backup point guard. And I think part of the reason for that is the Cavs have a lot of wings, and they've got to find time for them all. And I think it's much easier to stick Neto on the bench and just have him run the zoo crew at the end of games than it is to try and figure out.
Interesting. So you don't think he's getting – like, you think he's going to be in the Pangos role where he's not even getting minutes most nights?
Well, if guys are healthy, if LeVert gets hurt or Garland gets hurt, he'll absolutely be in the rotation, at least until Rubio comes back.
Sure.
But I think they just have so many wings. Like, let's count
them all up. Who are they trying to – yeah, go ahead. Yeah,
so they've got Okoro. They've got Markkanen, who plays the three.
Although, here's the thing about Okoro is that, I mean, his most effective position we've seen in the NBA is at the two, is it not?
Right, that's what I'm saying. So you play – if you can play LeVert and Okoro together, which is a big if given Okoro's shooting, and that was kind of a disastrous pairing last year. I don't know. I mean, you can look that up, but
That's a great that's a great pairing. No, because
defensively it is, but I think they had a really hard time generating points without. So, but then you've got Chetty, you've got Okai Agbaji.
So they actually, you know, here. Okay, so you want the deal? Here's the deal. What? So they played 368 minutes together last season, and they were -2.44 net rating,
which isn't terrible, especially given the guys that were hurt.
Exactly. And here's the other thing: offensive rating 122.
Interesting.
So the problem was on defense, 124.
Yeah. Well, but a lot of that was they had no backline defense.
Absolutely. That was mostly without Allen, right? Yeah. Yep. Without Allen and Mobley.
For a large stretch of that, yeah.
Yeah, so...
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Maybe it was my recollection.
Yeah, well, here's the thing is, I think you might be onto something with this, you know. And here's the thing with your idea is that the reason why I believe it is because it makes sense if your aim is to be successful in the playoffs. If you're going to be successful in the playoffs, you need Caris LeVert being that backup, you know, offensive
playmaker.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. You need him
to be. Well, and plus, now you're not starting a guy under 6'6", or you don't have a guy on the floor shorter than 6'6".
Exactly.
So you add Chetty to that. You add, you've got to find minutes for Agbaji.
Yeah. right.
I think Dylan Windler is going to end up being the odd man out on this team.
Interesting. And, so between Chetty,
if they sign Sexton, they got 17 guys under contract, right?
Right.
And so I think Stevens, because he's not guaranteed, probably gets cut. And boy, Cavs Twitter doesn't want to hear that. and then you've got Windler, who I don't think they're going to be able to find a place to move him to because they don't want to give up a first to do it. No one has a roster spot, so I think they'll end up stretching him. Or the idea I had where you trade for a guy with a non-guaranteed second year and you stretch
right.
over 5 years. But I don't think they're going to be able to.
So here's my question, though.
Or Chetty.
You think both are gone. So, but
I think Stevens and Windler are gone.
You don't think Chetty's gone. Okay. And then. Okay,
mainly because he makes more money and it's harder to stretch him.
Right. Right. And you have the most hope for who between the three?
As a being on the Cavs?
As a being productive on the Cavs.
Oh, like Chetty has shown the ability to be productive when he doesn't try and do too much. Like,
right.
And I think that's one nice thing about having Neto back on the team.
Exactly. That's why I was just going to say.
Set him up.
I think Neto's going to get 10 minutes a night. I think he's going to get 10, 15 minutes a night.
Maybe.
I think.
I don't know. I mean, you saw.
If only, I think his role literally might be just to get to basically cater to Chetty and Love. Because Chetty and Love are the two guys that miss Rubio the most.
Badly, yes.
And Neto can do a facsimile, without the defense. He could do an offensive facsimile of Rubio, you know, which might be enough to hold you over in the regular season, you know, against backups.
I don't know. I mean, with what a good playmaker you say Karras is, why can't he be the guy that sets up?
No, absolutely. Loving? Absolutely. No, I mean, that's the thing is that he's shown in the playoffs he can be an offensive engine. So, I mean, and to your, you know, that's why I'm buying what you're selling, you know?
Yeah.
You know, let's do it. Let's see it, you know?
Why not? And I think the other thing, and the other reason I think Stevens is gone is how many power forwards does this team have? I mean, they've got Kevin Love, they've got Mobley, they've got Markkanen, who can play the three, mm-hmm. or the play the four. And I think you'll see Markkanen a lot at the four.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
I don't know, you know, if they there's nominally some minutes there at the four, but Stevens was awful last year and nobody wants to admit it. Like, his net rating was like the worst on the Cavs.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the tragedy of Stevens really mm-hmm. was that the coaching staff I think he earned playing time over Okoro, especially early Okoro, rookie year Okoro and second year Okoro a little bit. I think he legitimately earned more minutes than he got, you know, but he got stuck behind a developmental player in Okoro.
I think Stevens' problem is that he is a good practice player who plays at his ceiling in practice and doesn't have another gear.
No, I mean, that's literally his role. His role on the team is to be a defensive pest in practice. Yeah. So,
and I think to JB's discredit, he played him too much in the regular season and exposed him a little. So yeah, I don't know.
I didn't have a problem with it because, you know, especially after Wade got hurt. You know,
there's another guy that can play the four or the three for the Cavs.
I mean, he's the forgotten man, but I think he, you know, that's the guy
that's got so much more upside than Stevens.
Exactly. Yeah, I totally agree. I think he rebounds better. I think he has the athleticism, you know, that is there. I think the shooting is a little bit better. So, you know, I just hope the knee is okay and it didn't ruin his explosiveness. Because, I mean, like, that's a big part of Dean Wade's game is, you know, his athleticism.
He's sneaky athletic,
He is. Oh, yeah, there we go. Yep. Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, well, and then the funny thing is we've gone all the way through this. We haven't even talked about what Colin Sexton looks like on the floor for the Cavs. So we're going to cover that when we come back.
There you go. I like the light.
You like the light ones? Mm-hmm. What was it, Modelo Light?
Oh, no.
Especial.
It's Especial, yeah.
Okay, it's not the Negro Modelo. I love
you like Negro the Negro?
Oh, my God, it's so good. Really? Yeah, it's probably my beer of choice when I go to a Mexican restaurant.
Really? A little bit of lime interesting. In there,
go to town. I like Mexican beer. Like, I know. It's kind of interesting. A lot more microbrewers are doing Mexican-style beers now.
That's all the rage right now is lagers. Yeah,
I had a wild beer over the weekend. So my wife and I's 22nd anniversary this last weekend.
Oh, mazel.
I had a taco beer, It was a Mexican Cumin? Style lager with taco seasoning in it.
Yeah.
And it was very spicy. Probably one of the spicier beers I've ever had in terms of, you know, front of your tongue heat.
Interesting.
Yeah. And one of my favorite beers right now is a mango habanero IPA.
Ooh.
Or a mango habanero hazy. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the taco beer was interesting. Ultimately, I wasn't a huge fan, but Guardian Brewing Company in West Michigan, if you're interested in trying the taco beer.
Nice. Yeah.
So anyway, welcome back to Cavs Podcast. I unbeknownst to you, Chris, I've been recording for the last minute and a half. So
excellent. Hell yeah. That is yes. We love improv at GTV.
Or just prov.
Yeah, probably. Exactly.
I don't even know what that means.
I don't either, but it will work with it. It works.
Yeah, so we were just talking about what does Colin Sexton look like on the floor for the Cavs if they do sign him. How many minutes a night does he play, Chris?
I mean, God, it's so crazy.
I think he can't play more than 30 minutes a night. Huh?
I mean, you'd think, but...
This team has a logjam. I mean, there's a lot of talented players on this team.
Yeah, I mean...
And where does he play? Does he play the one or the two?
I have to feel like he's playing the one, backup one. They want him. They want to pay him.
Spots.
I think.
I think they're
going
to run that hybrid, you know, dual point guard offense, dual playmaker offense.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Hope he can give them some of that. I think he plays. They play combo guards. Here's the next question. I think it is hard to believe he doesn't come off the bench with the way they've approached these contract negotiations.
Exactly. Exactly. No, I mean, that's what I'm assuming is that that's why I think he's in the running to play the backup point guard. Hell, I think he has, you know, to me, he's more likely a choice at backup point guard than LeVert is, in my opinion, because I think the tea leaves saying that LeVert starts at the two and is going to play the two. So, to me, it seems like he's all lined up for like 15, 20 minutes a night as a backup point guard, and let's see what he can do with it. Like, okay.
I think he doesn't get less than 25 a night. I mean, I think.
No, I agree.
A good amount of minutes.
I agree. I mean,
I think you're going to see a lot of LeVert and him on the floor together, which scares me a little bit.
I know, man, that's, you know, yeah, because.
Both of those guys who like to have the ball in their hands and dribble the snot out of it.
Yeah.
At times.
And the
both
thing
have
about,
a penchant for being undisciplined on offense.
Yeah. I mean, that's the whole thing. And what bugs me about Colin, what has always bugged me about Colin is just he refuses to change his game, really. You know, he always reverts back to what he wants to do, which is have the ball in his hand. And like you said, dribble the snot out of it and take a shot. You know, that's literally what he wants to do. You know, I credit to him for doing some of the off-ball stuff, but it drives me nuts how many times he won't run the court because he wants to be the point guard. He wants to go back to the back.
He should be running the court every time. Like, he should just be sprinting out there because
he's one of the fastest guys in the NBA, right?
Get that outlet.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Run down there and run to the corner.
Cherry pick. Yeah. Cherry pick all day.
Yeah.
No, I agree. I agree. It's just, you know, that's the thing is that Sexland has been such an abject disaster. It has never, ever played any winning basketball. You know,
stretch of time?
None. Exactly. Yeah. They've never been successful together. And so now we're like, you know, if you're talking 30 minutes a game for Sexton, that means we're right back to Sexland again. And that's that's scary. That's actually scary.
So you don't think Garland and Sexton should ever share the floor?
No, absolutely not. Not until here's when you know that they can actually coexist on the floor is when you see Sexton finally get past a 20% assist rate.
Okay.
You know? So that's the key. I think that's what this whole season's about, at least for Sexton, is that can he prove to be a competent playmaker? That's where he's going to make his money. That's what he's, you know, when he goes onto the open market and he's one of markets himself to all the teams, he's got to have that passing component to his game or no one's going to pay him. You know, like no one's paying him now. They have a chance to pay him. You know, all I hear is 24-point scorer being hung out to dry. Well, that's because people who watch him know that that's all he can do. And well, he doesn't really even do it at that great of efficiency either.
And I had a tweet the other day where I compared him to four guys that kind of had that, at his age, had that 24-point-a-game scoring. And almost all his numbers across the board were at league average,
right.
Except for field goals added. And he actually subtracted field goals added for his team. And you know what that says? He's standing there with the ball in his hands too much. He's eating up the shot clock.
Yep.
Yeah. So,
yeah, I mean, you go back and look at the tracking stats. He's always played like a point guard. He's always played like a point guard.
One that moves the ball and then relocates.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So, and that's the reason.
And his defensive chops, like, I don't know if you saw the highlight today of him locking down some muscle-bound dude in a pro-am. And I'm like, what does it show us if Colin Sexton can hound a guy that literally backs you down at the point guard spot like Mark Jackson in 1992? What is that showing us? What we need to see from Colin is he a guy who actually understands how to play defense off the ball and actually, you know, can navigate an off-ball screen defensively or – you know, make a correct defensive rotation because we have seen, you know, no ability for him to do that in his first three seasons. Like, I always call
Caris LeVert. Here's a stat for you. Caris LeVert's stock rate is basically double Colin Sexton's. So, and we know, and no one is calling Caris LeVert a lockdown defender. You know, yeah. No disrespect.
Well, I think there's more to defense than stocks, but it's a big component of it. But we haven't seen Colin Sexton even taking stocks out of the equation. Like his all the regression stats around his defense every single season have been bad, you know. Right. So if he has figured out how to turn that around, maybe it's a good thing, but we've seen no evidence of that so far. So
yeah, well, I think the silver lining to moving him to a backup point guard position is finally he can guard his size. You know, what if he's guarding his size? But you know, maybe he becomes an average defender. You know, maybe the problem's probably been he's had to guard up ever since Garland was drafted.
A lot of you are in garden starters in the NBA.
Absolutely. Exactly. Maybe he starts making some plays. So, you know, that's the whole thing for me is like, you know, I'm riding in the lane, you know, you got the haters on one side and the fanboys on the, or fan people on the right or whatever. But to me is what if he's just the best six man? What if he's six man of the year material? What if he's like Jordan Poole or Tyler Hero? Like, you know, finding his role that actually impacts winning. You know, like, what if that happens for Sexton? And wouldn't that be a beautiful thing, huh?
It would be a beautiful thing. If it happens, I would be surprised. But the guy. Here's the thing that drives me nuts. I love Colin Sexton, the person, much more than I love Colin Sexton, the player.
Yeah.
And he's kind of gotten a raw deal. In that they made him the face of the franchise for three seasons, and then he didn't sign a big extension last year, and now he's kind of caught holding the bag. And I think
Did he fire his agents?
Yes.
Before or after those deals were offered?
He fired his agent like after this season, the All-Star break last season.
Okay, so yeah, it was recent. Wow.
Yeah, so it was clutch. Yeah, it's clutch now. It was CAA.
CAA. So. Oh, so of course, that's why the Knicks rumors were around last offseason.
Right. Well, and it's interesting because I actually think if I were the Knicks, I would much rather have him than Donovan Mitchell because the price would be a lot less.
You know who agrees with you, apparently?
Who?
Danny Ainge.
What?
Yeah. Yeah, I thought we did you not know about it? Like, I guess there's interest from the Utah Jazz organization for Colin Sexton.
For like, Tank Commander Sexton?
Yeah, yeah. Well, here's the thing. Well, someone made the point about Ainge in terms of when they're talking about the trade demands and stuff like that is that they're hunting around for like they're basically hunting around, in my opinion, for like a Lauri Markkanen type deal out there. Where there's like a young guy that's probably underachieved a little bit, but has talent, you know, and has pedigree. So, like, I think Sexton does fit the bill. of that kind of player. So it's a player they think that they could take a shot with, basically. They can take a shot with to develop. I
don't hate that for them.
No, you're right. Exactly. Because it's all upside. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Exactly.
So, okay, say that you could get Sexton to the Jazz in a three-way deal with Mitchell going to New York. Who would you want for Sexton from the Jazz or the Knicks? I like Jordan Clarkson. I'm not sure he solves a problem. I want him back on the Cavs. I don't know.
I mean, he really did grow up on the Cavs, to be honest with you.
Sure.
He really, like, it's funny that that's really when he played for the Cavs is really when he started to get on the real, you know, he made himself a career from his play with the Cavs. So, that's a great question, you know, because if the Knicks are possibly involved, like, you know, that opens the options up quite a bit, I think. I mean, the obvious ones are obviously Conley or Bogdanovich or Clarkson. You know, they're trying to do a dump, you know, a salary dump or whatever. But on the Knicks, you know.
I mean, Conley is a little scary to me.
Oh, I agree. Yeah. No, I mean,
it feels like his best years are behind him.
And yeah.
It's like, when do the wheels completely fall off?
Yeah. That almost feels like a sucker's bet, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. But no, I agree. Yeah.
You know, for the Knicks, you've got, although I don't understand why the Knicks would want Mitchell, because Jalen Brunson and Mitchell, then you've got two small point guards or two small guards again.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. But the guy I actually really like, would not mind taking a flyer on at all is Emmanuel Quickley. I like Emmanuel Quickley a lot.
Ooh, I'll give you a name.
Who?
Evan Fournier.
Ugh, no.
No?
No. The problem with Evan Fournier is he's too old and his contract is too high.
He's a
10-year vet.
Damn, is he that old?
He is that old. I just
age 29
stunk last year.
I mean, to be fair, it wasn't. I don't think it was his fault. I do like Quickley. You know, I do like the Quickley idea. I just like the idea of Evan Fournier shooting and him having the freedom to get the ball. Like, Darius Garland won't refuse to pass to him like Julius Randle.
Interesting.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's not the worst idea. The problem with him is I think Fournier's contract is like
it's 17
three
million
more years.
Yeah. Oh, are you serious?
I think he's under contract for three more years. I think he signed a 4-year deal before last season.
Ooh.
Yeah, and I think I'm gonna look it up real quick.
There we go.
And that's really hard to overcome. So instead of 4 years, 73 million.
Yep, so, you're right. Yeah. Last year was the first year of it, and he's got 36 million.
That's a lot of salary. Yeah.
36
million.
As they
say, it's not the years. It's not the number, it's the years.
Yep.
And with that,
yeah, that's fair.
We will be right back.
Nice.
Welcome back to Cavs Podcast. We're talking about the name on every Cavs fan's lips, Evan Fournier. Don't Google that. The least Googleable name in the NBA, Evan Fournier. But we came up with he has two more guaranteed years at $18 million. And I don't know, with the Cavs having that cap room next year, does he make sense?
You just said it right there. The cap space is paramount, right?
Is it? I don't know if it is. To me, I mean, what do you do with that cap space if you're the Cavs? Like, do you trade a guy into it? Because you're not signing free agents.
Yeah, I mean, that's the conventional wisdom. I guess here's the thing is that are there guys like, you know, so you don't buy the Andrew Wiggins type at all. You don't think that, And they could acquire a guy who just wants a big contract and would be willing to play for. I mean, honestly, we're a winning team. You know, it's a winning situation, at least. Get paid in a winning situation.
I don't love Wiggins. I think he's kind of a poop. So I just hate the guy's demeanor. I think he's kind of an idiot. I think he's in the perfect situation in Golden State. I actually was, you know, a big Wiggins fan when he was drafted, but
you turned on him. Whoa.
I did.
Wow.
I don't like him that much. So I don't know. I don't know who you could get next summer. Maybe you trade a guy if a team's looking to get out of a contract, but I think it's hard for the Cavs. I think the Cavs should not let the possibility of cap space next summer keep them from doing a move that makes them better in the long term. Now, do I think that move is Evan Fournier? No. I think cap space next summer is more important than a guy like Evan Fournier. But a guy like Emmanuel Quickley and maybe a nice young player from the Jazz, I'm intrigued. Or Bogdanovich from the Jazz, because he's only got 1 year left on his deal. Those names intrigue me. You know, if you could move out Sexton, Osman, and maybe a or Wendler, and maybe a Stevens for those guys, I think that for one or two of those guys, that makes a lot of sense. Like, if I get Quickley and Bogdanovich for Colin Sexton, I would do that in a heartbeat. Would
wow.
you?
No, I wouldn't. I'd want really? The lottery ticket. I want the yeah. Yeah, I mean, just the thing that
I think
go
Quickley is a lottery ticket. I think he could be a very good player.
The problem with Quickley is that he really can't get to the basket and shoot very well. He can't finish. That's
yeah,
the thing.
Yeah, it's a sub 40% field goal shooter. I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
And
no,
say what you want about Colin Sexton, he is not that. I mean, he has a shot blocked the second most in the NBA after Zion Williamson. But despite that, he still puts up a decent field goal percentage for a guard. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And he has that ability to get to the line, too.
And he does attack. Well, it's because he attacks the basket. The same reason he gets his shot blocked, it's his same reason he gets to the line.
Yeah. So. And with that it being a priority in playoff basketball, I'd want Colin Sexton off the bench more than I'd want Emmanuel Quickley.
Okay. Fair.
Yeah.
Fair. I didn't realize he was that bad of a finisher.
Yeah, he's pretty bad. He's pretty bad. Yeah. I think the two intrigues about Quickley has been his shooting and his passing ability.
Yeah, and he's been a pretty decent defender.
Yeah, I imagine so. Yeah, he's super long and quick. So and he's a smart player. No, I like him. And he's kind of gotten a raw deal. It's funny. He's kind of gotten a raw deal in New York.
Well, he got Thibodeau'd.
Yeah, no, you're right. Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, and then you've got nobody wants Cam Reddish.
Right.
Obi Toppin.
Yeah.
Actually, I wouldn't hate Obi Toppin on the Cavs.
No,
but,
I
don't know.
He's another 3-4, you know? Like, is he a real wing? I don't think so.
No, I don't think so. I think he's a 4.
Masquerading as a 3.
I don't know what he is. I think
he's, no, you're right. He's a 4. He's a 4.
Yeah, he's
small
a
ball
third,
5.
He's a third forward for a team. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I mean, I don't. But if you get a first for him, I don't know. To me, I feel like Colin Sexton's going to end up being the odd man out in Cleveland. But
you think so? So
play the lottery ticket.
So you think? Okay, so. What do you think? So you think he plays on the qualifying option, or you think he gets traded?
One or the other.
Oh, you think it's going to be one or the other?
Yeah.
You don't think he's going to sign for 340 or 350 or whatever it is?
I don't think so. No. The only thing that could change that is if the Cavs, knock on wood, had a preseason injury, and they suddenly needed him. But
yeah.
I have a hard time thinking that's going to happen.
Right.
But maybe another team he might end up on is the Nets. You know, maybe they shuffle that whole team around, and somehow the Cavs move him over there and get draft picks or players for him. So
But
I think he ends up being the odd man out, and I think it's very hard to commit to him long-term and really think he's part of the long-term core and rotation if he's only playing on the qualifying offer, if you're Cleveland.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, though. I don't know. Maybe, you know, maybe but I'm just naive. They
would still have his bird rights.
Right, exactly. And they have that $30 million. You know what I mean? What if he goes crazy? What if he becomes what...
Jalen Brunson did.
Yeah, exactly. There you go.
Yeah, I mean... Great point. It's a weird thing because if he plays on the qualifying offer, he has a trade veto.
Right.
Because he would lose his bird rights if he's traded. Because you can't keep your bird rights on a 1-year contract if you're trading.
Mm.
So he actually would get a trade veto, which is weird. And then they would be in the situation where they'd have his bird rights next summer, but he'd be an unrestricted free agent. So
right.
Which means probably a sign-and-trade given the state of the salary cap in the NBA, but it's a weird situation. I mean, you feel bad for the guy because he really doesn't have a lot of leverage. His only leverage is to play really well.
Yeah, which is perfect for the Cavs. I'm just
saying. Contract year Sexton.
You know, let's go,
but
baby.
If I'm him or his agent, well, I don't think Clutch cares. If I'm him, I want some long-term money. I would not – if they did a 3-year, $40 million whatever deal that they're talking about, and then the third year was an opt-out, I would have a hard time passing that up.
I agree. Just seems – yeah. It's just
and it's
crazy.
Only really one extra year than the qualifying offer.
Exactly. Exactly. And you've quadrupled your salary in the process.
Yeah.
So
yeah. –
I totally agree. You know, it's obviously, but I mean, that's the thing is that, you know, how does he see himself? And it's obvious that he sees himself a certain way, you know, that qualifying offer,
And then say he signs that and then does blow up. Is he going to be totally bitter the next season? Because he's not making a ton of money now. And the other problem is it's hard. You can't really extend him for a huge raise after that either.
No, I mean, they can offer him like upwards of $30 million.
No, but if he was under contract for like $13 million and he had a really good season this year and then with an extension is not big.
No, you're right. Okay, I see what you're saying. You were talking about if he signed that short-term deal.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So I don't know. What other crazy off-season stories have we heard? We've seen Kevin Love traveling the world with his new wife, Kay Bach.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. That's awesome. Chetty and we talked about Lori, but Chetty's been blowing it up in Turkey.
He's been averaging in the high teens. Turkey spreads it around a lot.
That's true.
But he's been playing well. So
Yeah. I mean, and it looks like, I mean, he's playing the scoring role. It's funny because he's playing the scoring role for that team. So
yeah,
because he's getting buckets. So it's awesome. Love it.
I have a question for you.
Yeah, shoot.
Would you have any interest in Julius Randle?
I mean, I love a good deal, you know.
But I don't think he starts for this team. No, he doesn't.
No, that's what I was just going to say. That would be an embarrassment of riches, six man for the Cavs, right?
Or maybe you go, Tower City and you put Mobley at the three.
Oh well, I think that sounds like it's already in the works.
Oh really, Mobley playing some three?
Yeah.
Where'd you hear that?
It was based on the video clips of him playing with Durant.
Well, so you saw that none of those shots he shot were outside of the NBA three range.
Right.
That's hard to do if the guy's not shooting NBA. And of course, they're in and out all the bricks.
Yeah.
So, and we saw some bricks that could have killed some birds last year. So, from Mobley, I mean, he had some danger low flying plane shots.
Yeah, I mean, I just think he just needs confidence, you know. I'm a believer still in the shot. Like, I think that he needs the green light. I think he needs the ball in his hands a little bit more, you know. So, it's going to be interesting. I think it's really interesting going, you know, talking about to throw it back all the way to the draft. You know, I think that's what's come into focus a little bit is the Agbaji pick really kind of sets the expectations. I think that Mobley's going to benefit a lot from having a guy playing with a guy like Agbaji next to him.
Well, and it's interesting because we've talked about all these guys and we haven't talked about Agbaji at all.
Right. You're right.
Like, how many minutes a night does Agbaji get?
I don't know. I mean, like, he should get like 15, right?
I think about 15 is probably, yeah. I think they bring him along a lot more slowly, which is super weird because you've got a guy like Sexton and Garland that came out super young and they gave him a ton of minutes.
Right.
Then you got a guy that comes out as a senior and he might only get 15 minutes a night for this team.
Yeah.
Isn't that odd?
Yeah. That's a great point because what's even more peculiar is if you go back and look at what he said about joining the Cavs, apparently he was told that they let young guys play. So he believes he has a chance to possibly start for this team. He thinks he can get a fair shake and compete for a starting job.
I would be very surprised.
Me too, of course. But
yeah,
who knows?
I still think it was kind of a panic pick. It still doesn't make any sense to me.
I mean, it makes sense. It makes sense to me only because of if everything was catered towards creating space for Mobley and basically for the Twin Towers to operate.
Yeah.
That's the goal. You know, that's what they need is that they need to give more space to Mobley and Allen to get their shots off because they're too good offensively to not run some offense through.
Yeah. If that's the case, then they're definitely going to be some, JB's got his work cut out for him because it feels like they've got, you know, 12, 13 quality guys.
Yeah.
So
what a great problem to have.
Yeah.
I love it.
I still think you're going to look back on that. The farther away I get from it, the more I think they're going to look back on that Agbaji pick and
consider it
a missed opportunity.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough. I think, you know, I kind of agree with the panic part because it was Jalen Williams that got taken really at 12.
Wanted, yeah. Yep. They wanted Jalen Williams and they didn't play it great.
You know, Oklahoma paid.
They got scooped.
No, they did. But Oklahoma paid a hefty price.
Yeah, but they had a boatload of picks. And that's what you do when you have a boatload of picks.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right.
And I think Tari Eason is
Okay. Damn, you just drove a stake through my heart, my man.
I think that's the guy they're gonna end up regretting not
doing. Oh my god.
Because he looked good in Summer League. He looked like a guy that could do everything and didn't need plays run for him and kind of what the Cavs are missing.
Yeah. Oh my God, you're breaking my heart again. I just forgot about him. I literally just forgot about him, and you just had to.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Well, if it's any consolation, Keon Ellis has looked really good.
Yeah, thank you. Oh, yes. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, no, what's crazy about the Keon Ellis thing is like the rap on him was that he was much like a Agbaji. You know, where you weren't getting much more than shooting from him.
Yeah, but you looked at the stocks numbers and that was garbage.
Exactly. Exactly. No, you're right. And not just that, I believe that Keon Ellis showed some actual playmaking ability that Agbaji did not show in Summer League.
No, Agbaji looked pretty one-dimensional in Summer League.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, exactly. He's such a limited player. You know, granted, he's great attitude.
Hey, if he can be really good at what he does, that's great.
Yeah, no, you're right. No, I mean, then we got Danny Green, you know?
Yeah. Well, and then the other guy that I was like, ugh, was Nikola Jovic, who I think could be very
Yeah. I mean,
I think you're an absolute steal for Miami.
God, I hate Miami. So,
yeah, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, there you go. Little draft slot there.
It was an intriguing rookie class, and a lot of these guys may be lousy, but a lot of them, I'm excited to see what they turn into. But I do think they'll end up looking at Agbaji as a missed opportunity. But hopefully I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong. I hope he shoots the lights out for the Cavs.
I mean, if he's getting a Koro space, I think he could be in line for a very good year. I mean, I could see him easily doing something like 40% shooting.
Who, Agbaji?
Yeah.
If he's getting that kind of space, maybe.
I think he's gonna. I mean, you have to sag because of Tower City.
Yeah.
You have to.
Yeah, and if you've got Garland at the one, you can't sag off him.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So.
Well, we will find out. And,
that's right.
Yeah. I feel like we beat this dead horse into the ground. Maybe in the coming weeks we'll have some conference previews and there's some
brainstorming happening, shall we say.
Yeah. Yeah. And you got anything to pitch? Any stories to tell?
I will pitch, you know, I told you, but I'll tell the listeners out there, the commentariat, Modelo Especial. That's what's on tap tonight. So, the one thing I wanted to check out, but I haven't had time to check out was Sandman.
Oh, it's so good.
Is it?
Yeah, I really enjoyed. I finished it earlier this week. I also saw Prey, which everybody's talking about. I don't know if you've seen Prey or heard of it.
No, I've heard the.
Yeah, Prey was fantastic. Really, just a well done movie, and kind of dumb it wasn't released in theaters, but we live in dumb times. So Prey was really good, really worth watching. It's just a great like hour and 40 minutes, super tightly paced, really good characters, not a lot of waste space, great action sequences. And then Sandman is just gorgeous. It's gorgeously shot. The special effects are amazing. I think the writing, obviously based on Neil Gaiman, is really strong. I don't want to give too much away about the end, so I'll kind of save my long-term analysis until you get to watch it. But I really enjoyed it.
So. Okay, well, I love it.
Haven't seen The Bear on FX, which is about a short-order cook in Chicago, that show is freaking phenomenal.
Nice.
It's so intense. Like, one of the most intense shows I've seen in a long time.
Yeah. Oh, so. Well, here's the pitch I'll give you. Okay, so one pitch would be a shout out to my friend Brent Colatalo. He works in the music industry. He's worked with everybody in the music industry, and he has an act called Des Rocks.
Okay.
So he's a kid from Brooklyn. Rock and roll is not dead. You know, it's guys like Des Rocks keeping it alive. There's kids out there that listen to and make rock and roll music. So,
absolutely.
You know, check it out. You know, Des Rocks is DESROCS. So
nice. I'm hoping that I'm going to Vegas next month, and I'm hoping I get to see gorillas.
Ooh,
so I'm excited about
nice, Vegas, nice. Yeah.
I'm excited. So I'll tell you, I've got stories about it coming up, but
beautiful. Oh yes. What's the movie? Oh, you just reminded
me. The Hangover?
No, with Vince Vaughn and his
Honeymoon in Vegas?
No. It's like him and his boy.
Oh, Swingers.
Swingers. Is it Swingers? Yeah. Oh, yeah.
With him and Jon Favreau.
Yes. Okay, you nailed it.
That's behind Iron Man and The Mandalorian. So.
There you go. That's, yes, sir. Living vicariously. That's awesome.
Yeah. No, and if you haven't checked out his show, he did the movie Chef, but he has a show on Netflix called Chef where he goes around and just cooks with celebrity chefs and hangs out with other celebrities. It's pretty cool. It's a pretty cool show.
Nice. Nice. It's
definitely not vegan and not gluten free. So.
Oh, well, I can live with that.
Yeah. And as always, go Cavs.
Go Cavs.
So, Chris, welcome back to Cavs Podcast. I feel like we didn't even talk about the Cavs schedule came out today, and we didn't even talk about it. How did we avoid that?
I mean, we were catching
morons.
I mean,
that's
There you go. Of course.
So the opener for the Cavs is coming up, and of course, I don't have it handy. So you get hot Googling action. When's the Cavs opener?
Well, it looks like regular season opener. Is it against the Raptors? October 19th at 7:30 p.m.
Yeah. Yeah, that should be a good one. I'm excited about that. I hope Evan
Mobley. That's a big time game.
Well, and I hope Evan Mobley takes that Rookie of the Year personally and destroys them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that was highway robbery last year.
Man. Yeah, that's, I'm year two Mobley. Oh, my goodness.
I'm excited.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm excited.
Yeah.
Year two Mobley, year two of the Darius Garland. All-star experience, and I'm psyched.
Yeah.
So, okay. 19th, Cavs, next game, next time we pod, we'll talk schedule. And
that's
as
right.
always, go Cavs one more
go
time.
Go Cavs. Bye. Go Cavs.
Thank you for listening to Cavs the Blogs podcast. Check back soon for some more fun with your favorite bloggers. There's a fire.